Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. The outcome of Iran's presidential election last Friday is generally regarded as a surprise. Of the half-dozen candidates, Hassan Rouhani was the least conservative. In the final days of campaigning, he got strong backing from the leading reformists. He won more than 52% of the vote and avoided an expected runoff. Now the focus is on forward-looking questions that are even more difficult to predict. Will it be possible for Rouhani to introduce substantial reforms, or will he be under strong constraints from the Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei? Will Iran's foreign policy change? On our program today, Shaul Bakash is a history professor at George Mason University in the Washington, D.C. area. Arash Karami is the editor of Al Monitor's Iran Pulse. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. Arash, how significant is Rouhani's victory for the reformist movement that was stunted by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's two terms as president?
Well, the fact that Rouhani did receive a large portion of the support from the reformists means something. Mohammad Khatami, the former president, he has a strong social base, and he can get out people to vote. And Rouhani's victory offers them a possibility, a hope for some movement, for some action. In the last 8 years, especially the last 4 years, mm-hmm. a lot of student groups, a lot of political parties have either been dissolved or they've been unable to operate. So if this provides some possibility for them to be able to operate, be able to at least gather, this would actually be a huge improvement for what they have now. It doesn't guarantee that they will have this, but it offers them the possibility. And obviously the situation of political prisoners is still an issue, and particularly Mousavi, Chaloubi, and Ahnalab for protesting the 2009 election are still under house arrest without charge. This is a major issue for mm-hmm. them. And, you know, Rouhani, he's really the only candidate out of the six final candidates to constantly condemn the security atmosphere of the country. And this resonated with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's doubtful that he's going to break the system. He's not going to break the system. But it's doubtful he's going to even implement strong or structural changes. But there is a possibility, even with the Supreme Leader's blessing, he might open the doors a little bit and allow for a little bit more movement and a little bit of a breathing room for the reformers to operate.
Okay, and Shaul, in your article in the Iran Primer, the headline is What Rouhani's Victory Means for Iran. So what are your main points?
Well, I agree with Arash that Rouhani's election does open the possibility of an improved political environment and more freedom of speech, press, and association. In addition to that, Rouhani has taken a much milder line in terms of Iran's foreign policy and its negotiations with the United States and its allies over its nuclear program. And he has spoken of ending Iran's international isolation. And finally, the new president will have to address the economic wreckage that 8 years of Ahmadinejad's presidency has imposed on the economy.
And speaking of the biggest issue facing Iran, at least from an outside perspective, is the West's concern that the ultimate aim of Iran's nuclear program is to build nuclear bombs rather than just generate electricity. And international sanctions have hobbled the Iranian economy. And in remarks in a few days after the election, Rouhani said he's, quote, still prepared to bring more transparency to Iran's nuclear program. So Shaul and then Arash, what do you make of the president-elect's comments this week?
This is Shaul.
Shaul, yes.
Rouhani does have a track record when he was Iran's chief nuclear negotiator in 2003 to 2005 of reaching compromise agreements with the Europeans and the on the nuclear issue. And he seems to believe that if he offers greater transparency and opens up Iran's nuclear program to more intensive inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency, he can satisfy the West's demands over Iran's nuclear issue. Now, whether the Supreme Leader will allow Iranian concessions before the severe sanctions imposed by the West on Iran are lifted is another question. We'll just have to wait and see.
And Arash, you have written about the relationship between the incoming presidents and the Supreme Leader. Can you tell us a bit about this long-term relationship?
Their relationship actually goes back decades. In the beginning of the war, back then, the president, Khamenei, he wasn't the Supreme Leader yet. He wasn't an Ayatollah yet. He put Rouhani in charge of a certain branch of the army. He has been the Supreme Leader's representative in the National Security Council for a very long time. So Rouhani is definitely an insider. He's had a good working relationship with the Supreme Leader. And Rouhani himself, he's been very critical of various reformist movements or protests. You know, he was critical of the student protests in 1999. He was critical of certain protests that took after the 2009 election. And these things, they did endear him, and they did keep his relationship intact with the Supreme Leader. So they're definitely on a good relation. I would just say something on the negotiation.
Right.
The fact that Rouhani ran on his ability to negotiate with the Western Europe and the fact that he's able to broker a deal with them. He was attacked by hardliners, especially the current nuclear negotiator and a candidate, Saeed Jalili, who said, and his deputy, Baghdadi, who said that, you gave up Iran's rights. And Rouhani actually took pride in this while he was being attacked by the hardliners. So the fact that he had such a strong relationship with the Supreme Leader, the fact that it appears to some extent with reliability that the Supreme Leader had a strong say directly within the Guardian Council that approved of Rouhani's candidacy, there's a possibility that the Supreme Leader realizes the country's suffering, the sanctions are taking a toll, and he seems possibly okay with allowing Rouhani to be the face of these negotiations and trying to implement them, which is what the president would have a huge say in. So there appears that the Supreme Leader might be okay with it and might have given a green light to see what the opposing side, particularly Europe, would say. I don't expect a whole lot of expectations with America yet.
And let's put some perspective on it. Shaul, you've written about Iran's six presidents, and it seems to be a similar situation with what happened after Khatami's election with the hopefulness. How does Rouhani compare with the two that came before Ahmadinejad?
Well, Ahmadinejad, the previous president, campaigned and was elected on a populist platform, and he claimed to stand as the champion of the little man. And in fact, during his presidency, he did pursue populist policies very much like Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Khatami, the previous president, launched a program of very extensive political reforms than the country experienced, at least during the early years of his presidency, an unprecedented opening up of freedom of the press and political association. He was later blocked by a right-wing backlash. I don't think we will see with Rouhani anywhere near as extensive an attempt to open up the political space as we experienced with Khatami. Mm-hmm. Rouhani seems to be much more a man of modest incremental steps rather than a radical change in direction. Now, one of Rouhani's mentors, another previous president, Rafsanjani, mm-hmm. was a pragmatist, a man who tried to open up the economy to the private sector and to reduce the state's role in the economy. And I think, you know, in that sense, Rouhani too will prove a pragmatist. And he's already talked in general terms of an attempt to steer the economy back to a more sensible, more moderate course, which I am sure he will try to do.
Okay. And what's Shaul, in general, I know that the economy and the nuclear issue were the two top issues that were raised during the campaign. But what about foreign policy and the issue with Syria's civil war? What are some other obstacles and policies that that are facing Iran?
Well, these others, in addition to the nuclear program, are very serious obstacles to an improvement of Iran's relations with the United States and with Europe. As I'm sure your listeners know, Iran is a principal supporter of the Syrian president, Assad, and Iran's surrogates, the Hezbollah fighting forces in Lebanon, are now involved in the Syrian civil war. It's very unlikely that under Rouhani, Iran's position on Syria would change dramatically. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's become a pillar of Iran's foreign policy to be opposed to the very existence of the State of Israel. And I think, again, it would be very difficult for the new president, however he is personally inclined, to change that position. So there's not going to be a radical change in Iran's foreign policy positions on these issues, but there is, as Arash stated a bit earlier, some hope that Rouhani will manage to soften Iran's position on the nuclear issue.
Mm-hmm. And Arash, what are your thoughts on the foreign policy issues?
Besides the nuclear issue, I completely agree. Syria is not going to change. Iran really sees Syria as a part of this axis. Iran and Syria relations go deep. Syria was the only Arab country to support Iran during the Iran-Iraq war, when they had other Arab countries in the Persian Gulf and in the Middle East to support Saddam, whether it was through money or sending in soldiers. And so Iranian, whether it's the foreign minister or other officials, they constantly talk about Syria's support. Even up until recently, they talk about Syria's support for Iran during the Iran-Iraq war. And it would be a big embarrassment for Iran to let this go or to turn their back on him just if they didn't have to. But also, they do believe that Syria is part of the resistance axis to Israel, and through Syria's support of Hezbollah, this is a major issue for them. They do want to be at the negotiating table. I know many have opposed this, but Iraq feels that they should be there. I doubt their position will ever change. Their position will serve and never change, and their position towards Israel is not going to change either, unless Iran really is facing some kind of existential threat. These two positions will not change.
Okay. And in some ways, does the election of a moderate, when Iran is going through such difficulty right now, take some of the pressure off Khamenei? That people have a little bit of hope now, and presumably won't protest Shaul?
Well, already there does seem to be a change in the atmosphere and environment in Iran, and clearly an expression of hope for change, both in the direction of relieving some of the security pressure on society as a whole and on the young, and improving the economic situation and improving Iran's relations with the international community. To cite just one small example, Rouhani, during his election campaign, paid special attention to women's issues. He mm-hmm. promised to establish a ministry for women's affairs and also to reverse the restrictions on women's access to higher education imposed by the outgoing government. So in all these spheres, I think we see the glimmers of hope in society as a whole for change. Obviously, this does relieve the pressure on the regime mm-hmm. From popular discontent. But again, you know, Rouhani will have to produce results if he expects to retain public support and these hopes that he has stirred in the society as a whole.
Right.
I agree, and I think to add on the economy issue, the president does have a lot of discretion in the implementation of economic issues. One of our columnists in Al Monitor had a very interesting article on the subsidized housing projects that were implemented by Ahmadinejad and what kind of overall catastrophe that was for the housing market inside Iran. And a lot of the erratic statements the president made on the housing industry also created a lot of confusion and was really damaging. And if Rouhani can just bring a little bit of stability to even one market within the economy, this would vindicate Iranians' votes for him. So there's one definite difference where Rouhani can be of influence.
Okay. And before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on the website. There are interviews with another Iran expert and with a reporter who got jailed while covering the demonstrations after the 2009 election. There's also a breakdown of power, an analysis of the breakdown of power, the presidents, and the supreme leaders. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at globaljourn. And Shaul, what's your feeling about how these sanctions have affected the economy and just the overall climate in Iran as far as what the citizens are feeling? I'm trying to get a picture of what it's like day to day life in Iran now and how it's changed.
Well, as Arash mentioned, President Ahmadinejad has pursued policies at home which have been extraordinarily wasteful of very substantial oil revenues and which have fed inflation and economic uncertainty and instability. But in addition to that, the sanctions imposed on Iran by the U.S. and the Europeans have been devastating. Mm-hmm. Iran's currency is now worth less than half of what it was worth against the U.S. dollar even a year ago. Mm-hmm. Iran's oil exports have been halved. Iran's oil foreign exchange reserves are way down. The country is suffering from rapid inflation and high unemployment. And because of restrictions on the banking sector, Iranian banks have a great difficulty in conducting international transactions, and Iranian industries have difficulty in importing raw materials and spare parts. And therefore, while Rouhani may be able to correct some of Ahmadinejad's mistakes in the economy internally, he will desperately need some relief of these foreign imposed sanctions on the economy if he's going to show substantial improvement in the economic sphere.
And Arash, can you also kind of help us out with understanding what it's like living in Iran now compared with the past?
Well, you know, what we saw talking to people, getting a taste of them, you know, I was talking to someone, he said, for the first time in a decade, people are nice to each other. And, you know, for someone outside in another place might not understand that, but this economic punishment has really taken a toll on society. It really creates a lot of social issues, whether it's crime, whether it's just an atmosphere of anger or frustration was really prevalent in the country. And the fact that their vote, or the most moderate candidate, was able to win, the fact that they recently qualified for the World Cup, these kinds of things created a euphoria, and it created a lot of excitement. And just the fact that people are noticing that people are nice to each other, mm-hmm. or people are noticing people are happy, it's significant. And it's a huge, a lot of meaning. And a friend was talking to someone in Iran, and he said something interesting. He said, "Hey, you know, I'm really happy for you guys that Rouhani won." And he said, "Listen, we didn't vote for Rouhani. We voted for hope."
Yeah.
And I think that's really what it's about. That really captured what Rouhani represented for the people. It was really about a hope for something better.
Okay. And I wanted to talk about the media. And I know it's you guys monitor the media really closely in Iran and the social media as well. Shaul, what are your thoughts on... Could there be any change with media freedoms in Iran under the new president?
Well, certainly Rouhani has spoken of a freer press. In the last few years, restrictions on press freedom and academic freedom have greatly increased. The security and intelligence organizations have greatly increased their clout. Large numbers of journalists have been put on trial and jailed. But again, you know, Rouhani will face formidable obstacles in trying to bring about a change here, because the security agencies, the Revolutionary Guards, who are very influential, the leader himself, and the hardliners in general will be opposed to opening up political space and freeing up the press. Again, you know, we will have to see, you know, how much skill he shows in managing this difficult problem, how successful he is in persuading the leader to allow a more open environment for the press.
Mm-hmm. Arash, what are you seeing out there in the in the media? Any indications of possible change or looseness?
Well, there could be, and that was a great point on academic freedom as well. You know, under Ahmadinejad, an economist was arrested for criticizing economic policy. So this is how tight the situation was. Today, and I covered it in today's blog post and our monitor, the president, former president Khatami, spoke to an association at Tehran University. And he told people that you have to be patient, and he told them you can't have misplaced expectations. So if there is going to be change, there might be change once Rouhani takes office in August. And we have to remember Rouhani's not president yet. It's still Ahmadinejad is in the office. Mm-hmm. And even once Rouhani does get in there, we have to be very cautiously optimistic that any kind of change can be implemented. As of now, we don't really see anything. But, you know, surprisingly, Internet has been okay. They didn't shut down Internet as some had thought they might. They didn't restrict it as much as some might have thought. So there is some element of allowing people to kind of move, but nothing serious or nothing really significant. we'll have to wait and see what they do once Rouhani takes office. And also, we're going to have to wait, and I agree on the point of the Revolutionary Guard. Mm-hmm. The hardliners within the Islamic Republic, maybe some of the hardliners that fought in the Iran-Iraq War, genuinely believe the country owes them for sacrificing so much, they might come back out, and they might show a very strong reaction. They haven't done so yet, but we have to wait to see what their response is and how long they can be kept quiet, because we haven't heard the last of them yet.
Mm-hmm. And finally, a final question for both of you, Shaul. Arash mentioned how he sees the outcome of this election as a vote for hope. How do you personally feel? Are you optimistic, hopeful, or are you kind of still skeptical?
I think there's an opening and therefore room for hope. Again, to repeat, a lot depends on the skills of the new president, how long he can sustain the support he achieved in the voting and in the election itself. And finally, you know, the degree to which the economic hardships the country is facing, the conservatives and the leader will realize are a result of international sanctions, and that therefore Iran has to find a way out by moderating its foreign policy positions and also allowing the new president room to pursue the policies he articulated during the campaign.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist, produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Joining us today were Shaul Bakash and Arash Karami. Global Journalist is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Mikkel Christensen was our lead producer, with help from Tyler McConnell. Free Press Watch is next. And join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
Now, for our weekly rundown of major events affecting press freedom around the world, Free Press Watch. I'm Allie McIntyre. This week's news comes from Brazil, Greece, and an advocacy group. One Brazilian newspaper editor was gunned down in the Rio de Janeiro state. Police indicated that the murder may have been an attempt to silence the paper's, quote, combative reporting, according to a Sao Paulo newspaper. Brazil is considered the deadliest country in the Western Hemisphere for the media as of 2013, according to the International Press Institute. 10 journalists have been killed in Brazil since the start of 2012. In Greece, the government suddenly announced it was shutting down the state-funded broadcaster, ERT, and laying off its almost 3,000 employees. The government says the cuts are part of an overall reduction in public employment to meet austerity requirements, but private broadcasters around the country are retaliating. A Committee to Protect Journalists report says 55 journalists from 21 countries have fled their homes this year because of violence, threats, and possible imprisonment. The top countries creating refugee reporters are Iran and Somalia. CPJ helps to support these journalists, but many seeking asylum find it a challenge to secure visas, find comfort, or assimilate into a new society. For more information on these and other events affecting press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Allie McIntyre.